This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Yeah, welcome back into the show, and our spotlight is shining brightly. Well, I must say, Kel, guitar player, welcome.
Good evening.
Nice to see you. I didn't get this lady first time around at all.
No.
It kind of, I thought this is a really acquired taste. But a singer who I did a lot of work with here in Dubai by the name of Michelle was absolutely smitten with this lady and, you know, sang so many tunes from her. And so I did kind of get into her eventually.
Yeah.
And now, listening back to some of the clips that we're going to play, I do appreciate what she did.
Yeah, I think, again, at the time when she came out, because it wasn't just the voice, because the voice is quite eclectic and quite high-pitched.
Yeah.
People, I'm sure, will know the songs that we do. So it's one of those things, when you first hear it, you kind of go, what's that? That's a bit strange. And then that with the visuals that she had at the time as well, because she did a lot of interpretive dance. And that kind of late 70s time is probably a little bit left field for what people were used to. So your natural reaction is, who's that screechy woman? That's a bit weird.
But she obviously impressed some big names in the business, and certainly a certain member of Pink Floyd.
Yeah, who I'm sure we're going to the story in more detail. But discovered by Dave Gilmour, who paid for her demos, but proper demos, which were recorded at Air Studios. And one of the songs we'll play later was actually that demo, because he recognised it's not just the singing, which her singing is incredible, her range is incredible, her tone's incredible, but she writes everything.
Yeah.
And also her lyrics, it's very, very well-written storytelling, almost from almost an old folk tradition of where they tell stories of lore and all of that kind of thing. So I think that's the thing. Once you kind of unwrap the kind of that distinctive voice and kind of go into it a bit more, you're kind of like, oh, there's a serious artist in here.
Now let's get your dad in on this one. You must have messaged your dad saying, I'm going to be talking about Kate Bush, and there's a nice little story. What's dad's name?
Yeah, my dad Peter.
Peter,
who came into the studio.
Peter the mechanic, right?
Peter, yeah, my dad the mechanic. So I messaged him saying, we're talking about Kate Bush, because I knew that they were kind of near where we lived. And he said, oh yeah, I used to rent the garage in Welling from her dad, Dr. Bush.
I love it. Right, let's get started with probably what was the definitive song back in the 1970s that really put Kate Bush on the map. It was something called Wuthering Heights.
Yeah. And straight in at number one when she did it as well.
So that was Kate Bush and her debut single released back in 1978, all the way to number one with your first song.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was number one for a month, making her the first woman to have a number one in the UK that she'd written by herself as well. So I think with that, as we said earlier on, it also had that kind of memorable video. And I think even when she was on Top of the Pops, which was huge.
Kind of floating
around, wasn't it?
Like a flower in the wind or something.
Yeah, it definitely got your attention. Whether you liked it or not, it got your attention. Like, who is this girl? And she was, I think, when she released it, I think she was only like 17 or 18, I think, when she released it. Mm-hmm. Wrote the whole thing herself. It's incredible.
Obviously, Dave Gilmour from Pink Floyd saw some. Apparently, she went to his home and sat at the piano and sang two or three songs. And he was right.
Yeah, because her brothers were musical, her older brothers. So she'd been writing songs since she was 10. And it's estimated she had 200 songs written.
Really?
By the time that she came up with him. And there was a mutual friend who knew Dave Gilmour, passed him a demo tape. And he's like, right, let's meet this girl. She literally sort of played him a load of songs. And he went, right, I'm going to pay for 3 demos, but done properly with proper orchestration and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And then, as the story goes, when he was recording Wish You Were Here at Abbey Road, the record company came down and he said, I've got this girl. We've just recorded some demos. Do you want to have a listen to it and let me know what you think? And they listened to it and went, right, we'll take her.
Yeah.
And that was it. She was signed.
I mean, you know, if a member of Pink Floyd says, listen to this girl, she's great. You're gonna go for it, aren't you? that was the real kind of start for Kate Bush. We got a few songs that we're going to play. Here's one called Babushka. Listen to these songs back. There's a lot going on in them, isn't there?
There really is.
In terms of production, all sorts of kind of windy sounds going on in the background. And that is personally one of my favourites. 1980, that was a hit.
Yeah. Came from the album Never Forever. And I think there's so many textures. And I think this is the thing with her music. It is so complex. It doesn't follow. A lot of music will tend to follow the same sort of chord progressions and you know where it's going.
Yeah.
With her stuff, you don't. And this is this kind of featured a guy called John Giblin on bass. He had that fretless bass, which was really, really prominent in the 80s. But that layered with all of the other bits of production, which she was really, really into and spent a long time doing that and learned it. She did that a lot more than the PR. She'd rather be in the studio than in front of the cameras. But there's so much depth to it. It's just incredible.
Yeah, I think quite famously she shunned the limelight, didn't she? You know, interviews were not on the menu.
No. I think she was just a true artist wanting to be a true artist. Yeah. It's like, what want to know what I had for my lunch? Do you not want to know what I'm reading and what I'm recording next?
Yeah.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Night Shift with Mark Lloyd.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Now, this next piece of music that we're going to play, I think she wrote when she was just 13.
She did.
How do you write stuff like this at 13?
I know. I think this is the thing with Kate Bush. I think it's like once once you get past the, like, okay, she's got quite a high voice stuff, then you're completely hooked. Yeah. Like the first time you've had, you eat chili, you kind of go, oh, I'm not having that again. Then you kind of go, oh, just give me all the Gary you can. But I think the complexity within it, but yeah, but I think a lot of it was to her brothers as well, because their brothers were into folk music and into rock music. So she was exposed to a lot of stuff quite young. And I think her mother did dance. So she was in quite a musical family. But even so, to kind of come up with stuff as complex as she does, I think that that's kind of different league. And this actual version was the demo version, which Gilmore paid for. And interestingly enough, he, because as I said earlier, when he said, right, I'll finance it, he said, I want it properly orchestrated. I think he recognised what could be done. So he got a guy called Andrew Powell and an engineer, Jeff Emmerich, who had worked with the Beatles.
Okay.
And then Andrew Powell went on to produce her first two albums. But I think this is quite possibly one of my favourite songs ever. It's just absolutely beautiful.
He's here. He's here. He's here. He's here. I hear him before I go to sleep and focus on the day that's been. I realize he's there when I turn the light off and turn over. Nobody knows about my man. They think he's lost on some horizon, and suddenly I find myself listening to a man I never known before, telling me about the sea, all his loves till eternity. Ooh, he's here again, the man with the child in his eyes.
Goodness, you can certainly hear the Beatles kind of orchestration, the Abbey Road stuff, the violins going on there. It's got that mark on it, hasn't it?
It really has. But how well does it suit the music and her voice? It's just a perfect marriage. And I think that's clearly what Gilmore recognised, is like the talent of what she's written. Because I think on the demo, it was just her and the piano.
I'm surprised he didn't ask her to join Pink Floyd.
Well, interesting enough, he did that with Sam Brown. You remember Sam Brown who we interviewed? He discovered her and she told him. But I don't think Kate liked Latourie, did she? But what a voice, though. This is, as we said off air, it's Wuthering Heights is very high pitched, but you can hear the depth and richness and quality. 16 when she recorded this as well.
Yeah, absolutely epic. Now, I mean, We often have a bit of a laugh about the fact that, you know, you research the research, the research in the research, and kind of must have been about 5 o'clock this afternoon. I get a message saying, get Big Country, the seer. What's he on about? We're talking about Kate Bush tonight. Tell me the story on this.
Yeah, so I'm a huge Big Country fan. Most people know him from In a Big Country, but their third album was called The Seer, and Kate Bush sings backing vocals and does a bit of a duet on it as well. So when I first heard the album, I was like, wow, how does she get on it? And then I found out a lot of Big Country's music is kind of almost folky in a way, again, that kind of storytelling tradition. So they reached out to Kate Bush's manager and kind of went, right, okay, we've got this song, we think it would work for her. Can she have a listen? She listened, said absolutely loved it, orchestrated all of the backing. And as I say, it's one of my bands. It's a band that got me into playing guitar. And
is it really?
Yeah, Big Country. Yeah, it's phenomenal. Stuart Adamson, one of my biggest guitar heroes. So very happy to put this on.
We'll be right back.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It's better than Adamant, isn't it? So, Big Country with Kate Bush guesting on that particular tune. Now, I want to go to a duet right now that she did with another big-name musician, this time not a member of Pink Floyd, but a member of Genesis. And, of course, I'm talking Peter Gabriel. What do we know about this one?
Yeah, so this was... It just kind of gives me goosebumps just hearing the intro coming in with that bass line. They connected a lot through production because Peter Gabriel was one of the first people to have a thing called a Fairlight. Remember those back in the day?
Yeah, definitely.
Like cost of a mortgage to have one.
Yeah.
So she got to use it and they became friends because a lot of her music was also written on a Fairlight. So this particular song was, he wrote it with Dolly Parton in mind randomly, but she couldn't do it. And he was friends with Kate. And it's really kind of a song about, like, as the title is, don't give up, keep on going, you know, to feel good. And he asked her to do it. And it's got a really touching video where they just spend the whole video just holding each other. And wow. It just suits the lyrics. And and her voice, when it comes in, it's just super, super suits the song, but just hugely emotive. I've changed my face, I've changed my name, but no one wants you when you lose. Don't give up, 'cause you have friends. Don't give up, you're not beaten yet. Don't give up, I know you can make it good. Though I saw it all around, never thought that I could be a fainting. Thought that we'd be last to go. It is so strange the way things turn. Drove the night toward my home, the place that I was born, on the lakeside. As daylight broke, I saw the earth, the trees had burned down to the ground. Blending beautifully together on that tune, Don't Give Up. Peter Gabriel, formerly of Genesis, of course, together with Kate Bush. That's a lovely piece of music, isn't it? And you jog my mind, Fairlights. Yeah.
They were the big deal, weren't they?
They were. And Peter Gabriel's got this famous studio, which he still has, called Real World, down in Bath. So he was always very much at the forefront of technology. And again, I think this is the other thing with Kate Bush is people don't understand, like, behind the voice and her enigmatic personality, an incredible record producer. Mm. So they kind of connected on that. And actually, as artists, they're, you know, some of their work is both a little bit out there. So you can see, as artists, where they link in together.
Yeah.
And, for me, I think this is one of the finest duets I've ever heard. I think it's just so emotive. It kind of gives me goosebumps every time I hear it.
Thank you, Wayne. Adamant was awesome as well. Thank you for that. You've made Kel happy.
I agree.
This is The Night Shift with Mark Lloyd.
On Dubai Eye 103.8, the UAE's number one talk radio station.
Yeah, we are looking back at the career of Kate Bush. And of course, it's just recently had a resurgence, which we'll get to very, very shortly. We just heard that beautiful duet with Peter Gabriel. Now, tune called Cloud Busting. Not ghost busting, but cloud busting.
She could have done that as well, actually. She'd do a great take on that.
Who are you going to call? Kate Bush.
So this came from Hounds of Love, and it peaked at 20. And this was inspired by a Peter Reich memoir called Book of Dreams, where he was kind of, it was almost like a a love letter to his son, how they got on, and the kind of story when that he'd built this amazing machine and his son would go with him, and this mm-hmm. machine would kind of bust the clouds and have all the brain. So she really loved that story. So that's what inspired the song, and then also inspired the video. Again, another brilliant video of hers, which was conceived by Terry Gilliam off of Monty Python.
Yeah.
And it featured the actor Donald Sutherland, who sort of played the father role, and she played the kid. But this is a little bit more upbeat, but again, it doesn't follow a normal pattern. But I think this was like this. She hadn't been around for a little while. This was a bit of a change of scene for her. But yeah, wonderful uplifting song. It's really nice.
Donald Sutherland, to get him in your video.
Yeah.
That must have took some doing. Of course, massive actor back then. And I thought they were real cellos and violins. But that's the Fairlight keyboard.
Yeah. I think she produced a lot of her stuff then herself. This is why people didn't see her, because she'd be at home, especially with Fairlight, and playing around and doing it all herself.
But a few years ago, she did announce that she was going to do some shows. It might have been a one-off show, and tickets just flew.
Quickle and Glastonbury, and there you go, quick.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the demand for people wanting to see her perform was massive.
Yeah, it was huge. That was 2014. She did a week, and I think it was, I might be wrong, but I think it was Hammersmith Apollo, so it wasn't as if it was the O2.
Mm.
Very much more of an intimate setting. Before that, her last tour was 1979, I think. But I think the interest in it, I saw an interview with Elton John, and he said when he kind of got married, he said, I had about 600 people there. He said, like, celebrities, everyone. And said, Kate and her husband came along and said, absolutely everybody wanted to meet her.
Really?
And he said, I had the biggest celebrities. He said, I had royalty there, but everybody, the moment she walked in, wanted to see her.
Talk to Kate Bush.
She's got that, Paul.
Yeah, she has got that rather haunting kind of charisma.
Yeah.
We've got just a couple more tunes to squeeze in. Thanks for suggesting this once again, Wayne. What do we know about Wow?
Yeah, so this one, again, I think this shows more of her kind of theoretic side. It came out in 1979, and it was her second album, Lionheart, which, again, is a beautiful album.
Yeah, I remember the cover for that as well. It's very kind of historic looking.
That's right. Cover. And, yeah, I went through it at the weekend, and it's got so much depth to it. So this was the second single of it, and I think this was another one where the visuals kind of matched the song. It was parodied by Not 9 o'clock News. Do you remember that? Do you remember that program?
Yeah,
like a kind of comedy show at the time. But again, it's one of the things that made her famous, because the visuals met the music, which was both very, very attention grabbing.
Alone on the stage tonight.
All right, there's Kate Bush once again with all those lush strings behind her, but she must be absolutely counting her blessings last year when, of course, the big tune appeared on a TV series that literally took the world by storm with Stranger Things. And my goodness, yeah, this scene where her tune features was just an incredible scene. There's no two ways about it. And suddenly she got a whole new generation of fans.
Yeah, I think, wow, it just suits the programme so well because it's kind of sat within that era.
Yeah.
And interestingly, she was a massive fan of the series. That's why she allowed it to be licensed.
Okay.
Because a lot of, you don't hear her music on a lot of things because she's very tightly controlled. But she was a real big fan, but also Winona Ryder was as well. So apparently she used to walk around a lot in Kate Bush t-shirts to encourage the writers to somehow use one of her songs. And yeah, it went there. And that was her second number one since Wuthering Heights.
Really?
Yeah.
I bet she loves watching that TV show now with all those royalties rolling in, I'll tell you. So she was 64 years of age when that hit number one for Kate Bush, and that made her, she became the oldest female artist to top the UK singles chart, replacing Cher, who was 52, at the tender age of 52, when Believe reached at number one. But yeah, what a song. And apparently she wrote that in one evening, one single evening at her home, played all the instruments and produced the whole deal.
Yeah. And that's, again, if you think about it, like, she'd written 200 songs by the time she was 16. So when she was, that was kind of on her fifth album. So by that stage, I think she'd done the stuff where she'd got famous, she'd done enough work and albums and established herself enough where she could literally sit at home and work. And but again, you listen to the music and it's like, it just doesn't sound like anything, does it?
You can't
hear, well, that sounds a bit of that. It's just uniquely her. But
I wonder if she'll do any more. I wonder if she'll record again.
It wouldn't surprise me if just something sneaks out, because this is what she does. I think when, like, Red Shoes came out, which was like a 5 or 6 year gap, it was announced like 2 weeks before it came out. So I think she took a break to kind of raise her family. But I think people like this, it's just so in them to do music, so it wouldn't surprise me if from out of nowhere there'd be like a, I don't know, like a three-sided vinyl album.
And yeah,
I don't know if she'll do another tour, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's more music.
You can just imagine at the party, can't you? You know, hello, Elton John's over there. No, forget that. Where's Kate Bush? I want to meet Kate. So, final thoughts, Kate Bush.
But a truly unique original. Like, an English Rose, but I don't think there's many artists like her, but also that have the deep respect of other musicians universally. I mean, she wasn't huge in the States, but American artists absolutely adore her. I don't think anyone really has touched music in their own way, in their own style, quite as much as this lady, and I hope there's more music to come from her.
And great that your dad managed to fix the car as well. Thank you, Cal, as always, for coming along. Really insightful stuff as we shone the spotlight this week on Kate Bush.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8,
the UAE's number one talk radio station. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.